We'll go ahead and turn to Nehemiah 13. You remember where we were at in Nehemiah, of course, we're almost done. Last chapter, next week we'll take a short break to talk about how Jesus Christ changes everything. His coming changes everything. And then we'll have a review of Nehemiah, sort of wrap up, try to make some applications. We have a lot of ground to cover in a short amount of time today. We're going to try to stick to sort of the purpose, I think, of this passage. And remember, Nehemiah was a cupbearer to the king. Jerusalem was in ruins from their sin. He went back with a mission to rebuild the wall. They began to build that. Everyone worked, pitched in. Several problems cropped up along the way, as you remember. And Nehemiah dealt with those. And that's important because today we are going to see more of those types of problems. We're going to see more of those types of problems coming out today. The poor didn't have enough money. The rich were taking advantage of them. Their enemies were attacking them using distraction and different tools to try to dissuade them from the work. And Nehemiah, they just kept building. The wall got built. Nehemiah set up the human government there. Nehemiah set up the human government and the priesthood. And they kept the Feast of Tabernacles. Normal life was beginning to take place. The people were inhabiting Jerusalem, we looked at last time in Nehemiah. Some people sacrificially gave, like Christ-like sacrifice, to go live in Jerusalem and to give up their comfort. And then we come now, as a people live together, normal life is going on, we start to see more problems. And sadly, that's part of living in the world. Problems come up, difficulties, divisions, and as part of our nature is to sin. And as Christians, you know, we have that dual nature. We still have the flesh with us, and so it's part of what they were dealing with and what we are going to. It's very germane for us today as we think about how to deal with these difficulties. Nehemiah 13, read along with me. On that day, they read from the book of Moses in the hearing of the people, and it is found written that no Ammonite or Moabite should ever enter the assembly of God, for they did not meet the people of Israel with bread and water, but hired Balaam against them to curse them. Yet our God turned the curse into a blessing. As soon as the people heard the law, they separated from Israel all those of foreign descent. Now before this, Eliashib, the priest, who was appointed over the chambers of the house of our God, and who was related to Tobiah, prepared for Tobiah a large chamber where he had previously put the grain offering, the frankincense, the vessels, and the tithes of the grain, wine and oil, which were given by commandment to the Levites, the singers, and the gatekeepers, and the contributions for the priests. While this was taking place, I was not in Jerusalem. For in the 32nd year of Artaxerxes, king of Babylon, I went to the king, and after some time I asked leave of the king and came to Jerusalem, and I discovered the evil that Eliashib had done for Tobiah in preparing him a chamber in the courts of the house of God. And I was very angry, and I threw all the household furniture of Tobiah out of the chamber. Then I gave orders, and they cleansed the chambers, and I brought back there the vessels of the house of God with the grain offering and the frankincense. I also found out that the portions of the Levites had not been given to them. So the Levites and the singers who did the work and had fled each to his field. So I confronted the officials and said, "Why is the house of God forsaken?" And I gathered them together and set them in their stations. And then all Judah brought the tithe and the grain and the wine and the oil into the storehouses. And I appointed as treasurers over the storehouses Shemaliah the priest, Zadok the scribe, and Pedaiah of the Levites as their assistant, Hanan the son of Zachar of Mattaniah. For they were considered reliable, and their duty was to distribute to their brothers. Remember me, O my God, concerning this, and do not wipe out my good deeds that I have done for the house of my God and for his service. In those days I saw in Judah people treading wine presses on the Sabbath, and bringing in heaps of grain, and loading them on donkeys, and also wine and grapes and figs, and all kinds of loads which they brought into Jerusalem on the Sabbath day. And I warned them on the day when they sold food. Tyrians also who lived in the city brought fish and all kinds of goods and sold them on the Sabbath to the people of Judah in Jerusalem itself. And then I confronted the nobles of Judah and said to them, "What is this evil thing that you are doing? profaning the Sabbath day. Did not your fathers act in this way? Did not our God bring all this disaster on us and on the city? Now you are bringing more on Israel by profaning the Sabbath. As soon as it began to grow dark at the gates of Jerusalem before the Sabbath, I commanded that the doors should be shut and gave orders that they should not be opened until after the Sabbath. And I stationed some of my servants at the gates that no load might be brought in on the Sabbath. And the merchants in the cellar of all kinds of wares lodged outside Jerusalem once or twice. But I warned them and said to them, why do you lodge outside the wall? If you do so again, I will lay hands on you. For from that time they did not come on the Sabbath. Then I commanded the Levites that they should purify themselves and come and guard the gates to keep the Sabbath holy. Remember this also in my favor, O my God, and spare me according to the greatness of your steadfast love. In those days I also saw the Jews who had married women of Ashdod, Ammon, and Moab. Half of their children spoke the language of Ashdod, and they could not speak the language of Judah, but only the language of each people. And I confronted them and cursed them and beat some of them and pulled out their hair, and I made them take an oath in the name of God, saying, you shall not give your daughters to their sons or take their daughters for your sons or for yourselves. Did not Solomon, king of Israel, sin on account of such women? Among many nations, there was no king like him, and he was beloved by God, and God had made him king over all Israel. Nevertheless, foreign women made him to sin. Shall we listen to you and do all this great evil and act treacherously against our God by marrying foreign women? And one of the sons of Jehoiada, the son of Eliashib, the high priest, was the son-in-law of Sanballat the Horonite. Therefore I chased him from me. Remember me, O my God, because they have desecrated the priesthood and the covenant of the priesthood and the Levites. And thus I cleanse them from everything foreign, and I established the duties and the Levites, each to his work, and I provided the wood offering and appointed times for the first fruits. Remember me, O God, for my good. Like I said, lots in there, lots we could talk about, but there's definitely a central point. Join me in prayer. God, thank you once again for time to look into your word. And even to slow down and take a moment to meditate on what's going on there, think about it. Certainly cultural contexts are different, and your specific commandments to us are different than for them, but they were important to them. They were trying to obey you. Help us today to sort these things out. We have real life issues just like that in our own lives. And we need help. We need encouragement. And we need you to speak to us today so we can learn how to through the wacky waters of this world that we live in right now. And so we just pray that your word would work as you intend it to, and we'd have open hearts to hear. In Jesus' name, amen. Well, there are several problems to deal with in this passage. There is a lot, like I said, we could spend months just unpacking what's going on in these verses and look at all the connecting passages. Most of the stuff that's going on here we have covered in the last few years in other parts, other books of the Bible that we've went through. But notice this problem. On that day, as they read from the book of Moses in the hearing of the people, it was found written that no Ammonite or Moabite should ever enter the assembly of God. For they did not meet the people of Israel with bread and water, but hired Balaam against them to curse them. Yet God turned the curse into a blessing. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean that God was never going to accept any Moabite or Ammonite ever? That'd be bad news, wouldn't it? If you were born a Moabite or an Ammonite, that'd be bad news. It's not what it means. Because we have evidence of that, right? Because one of people in David's lineage was a Moabite. So that's not what it means. But what it means is what's going on there is these people, their heart attitude, their cultural drive was idolatry. And not to accept those who were not willing to separate themselves from idolatry into the children of Israel and just say, hey, you're one of us, don't worry about it. That's what they were doing. They were just accepting, it was part of normal life, normal course of life, Moabites and Ammonites, and just letting them live among them. And what's happening is what happens in life generally. The Israelites were not affecting the Moabites and Ammonites for good. They were adopting idolatrous practices in Israel instead. That's what was going on here. And so we have this problem of separation. This problem of separation. We'll talk more about that issue earlier next year, about some specifics on separation and what to do, what not to do. But they were called, in this case, they were called specifically to separate them from Ammonites and Moabites. What happened was they responded in obedience. And you notice there that even Tobiah, and it doesn't say this, but remember earlier in the book, Tobiah the Ammonite. Remember that? Tobiah had a room in the temple. And guess where his room was? His room was the stuff where you're supposed to keep the stuff to provide for the priests. Do you think that was random? I think that was by design. Get these priests out of here, get the Levites back out in their fields. Tobiah will move in, and it was designed to destroy the Israelites, to get them back into their former sins. Now, what's the big deal with the Ammonites and the Moabites? Is it just Tobiah and his pals and the problems they were causing in Jerusalem? Is that the issue? Actually, no. You'll notice in the text that it said they didn't meet Israel with bread and water, but hired Balaam against them to curse them. What happened there? Well, we have to go back even a little further than that to see the real problem with the Moabites and the Ammonites. Like I said, 40 minutes ain't going to cut it for this one, but we're going to try to get somewhere we can make a point. Where did the Moabites and the Ammonites even come from? They are a result of Lot's incestuous relationship with his daughters. Lot's daughters, they went to Sodom and Gomorrah. Lot went there to live. And be careful judging Lot too much. We don't know all the facts, because it does say that his righteous soul was tortured in Jude. What that means, you know. So he was sort of that guy torn between two worlds, I think. But he went there. And he lived in the Sodomites. They influenced him. He didn't want to leave. He loved living in Sodom. And God destroyed Sodom. Lot's wife loved Sodom and looked back when she was specifically told not to, and she was killed. And so here's Lot with his daughters, and they were older daughters. They had been married, and they go out, and they've been promised at least, and they go out, and they find themselves in a cave. They grew up in Sodom, and they say to each other, we're never going to have a man now. Our husbands are dead. What are we going to do? Hey, I have a great plan. Let's get our dad drunk and have sex with him. It's shocking, isn't it? Just to even say it. That's what they did, though. They got him drunk. And the first daughter says, hey, it worked. I got pregnant. Why don't you do it? So the second daughter did it, too. Guess who they had? Moab and Ammon. Now, that's sure to go well, right? Of course not. This is why we find ourselves with Moabites and Ammonites. That the result of those sinful choices, and you can just stack all of those on top of each other. Boom, 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 boom. All of those sinful, I'm going to go live in Sodom. I'm going to adapt myself to the culture. It's no big deal. I'm going to live among them. I'm going to try to minister to them by becoming more like them. It's no big deal. I don't have to, you know. And all of those sinful choices, and even down to the smallest of sinful choices, Lot just decided to get drunk. Right? Think about that. What's harm in that? No one else is harmed by you getting drunk. Is that true? We have very solid evidence that that's not true today, don't we? Right? You see that? All of your choices affect everyone else in your life all the time. There is nothing that you can just say, you know what, it's no big deal. There isn't. So here's we find ourselves, and then God's working in Abraham's line. They get carried away to Egypt. God delivers them. It'll be great. Deliverance of the Red Sea, the plagues, Red Sea. They're into the wilderness. They sin, and God's delivering them. And then finally, that generation of sin died off, and they're ready to take over the promised land. What a rejoicing time. And they go out, and who do they meet? The Moabites and the Ammonites. And they're going into the land, and God says, don't destroy the Moabites and the Ammonites. Why? Because think about it. They're related, right? Through Abraham. Lot is Abraham's nephew. They are related to the Moabites and the Ammonites. Crazy and wicked and nasty as it is, they are related. None of us have families like that, right? We all do, don't we? There's sin in our sinners. So God says, don't destroy them. So they ask him, hey, can we pass through? And they say, no. Get out of here. Well, then eventually they attack them. The Israelites kill the Ammonites. Og, king of Bashan, comes out and attacks them, and the Israelites destroy them. He was the Ammonite king. They go on, and the Moabites are like, man, they wiped out those guys. We are in trouble. Let's hire Balaam. And Balaam will curse them. Balaam is a wizard, a sorcerer, a false prophet, a demon worshiper, whatever. He's all of that. And he does magic things. He'll curse them and we'll be protected. We'll give him some money. It'll be good. He tried. He blessed him. He tried. He blessed him. He tried and he blessed him. God wouldn't let him curse the Israelites. So he said, you know what? This is a lot easier than we're making it, guys. Now, you can't start there as a wizard or whatever, right? Because you need your wizard money, right? You can't just start there and say, why don't you just send some of your pagan women down there and corrupt them? Look at these guys. They're Egyptian. They're fully Egyptian. And so they do. What happens? The people sinned. The people joined themselves. And it's interesting. It doesn't say that they just joined themselves to the women. They joined themselves to Baal of Peor. Peor was one of their mountains. That's where Balaam tried to curse them from, the high place of Baal there in Moab. So they went out and thousands of the people joined themselves to the Moabite women and to Baal Peor and were judged. And many more were killed there than any other time in the Exodus of Israelites because of God's judgment on them for rejecting him and turning to Baal of Peor, joining himself with the Moabite women after all they had experienced and all they had seen. Now, when that happens in your history and you hear about Moabites getting involved with your people, I think your ears perk up. That's what Nehemiah is doing here. He's like, look, God commanded us not to do this. Here's what's happened in the past. Why are we joining ourselves to these people? Hey, uses Solomon as an example, doesn't he? Solomon was wise. Solomon was a king appointed by God, and foreign women came in. And what did Solomon do? He started chasing their idols. So this is a real problem that they've got here, a real problem. Their hearts were so easily tugged to idolatry and sexual immorality and the pagan practices of those around them. And so they had to deal with it. A real problem. The Levites were not being provided for as a result. I believe it was a purposed attack against against God's people and against the temple. They had to stop working and go out from the temple to grow their own food. Well, what's the big deal about that, right? Because God had commanded them to set aside those things, to provide those stores in the temple, to provide for the Levites. It was God's command they were violating. And so the normal temple life and worship couldn't continue. So what did they exchange? They exchanged God's design for normal temple life and worship, providing for the priests and Levite, constant praise, constant offering sacrifice. They exchanged that for moving a foreign leader, into the storehouse, into God's house. Okay, now that's a problem, you see? That's a problem. You can't just let that go on. Priests and Levites. God's always commanded for his servants to be provided for. They were ignoring and defiling the Sabbath. Now that's a hard one for us today. Jesus has become our Sabbath, but built into the created order is a day of rest. It's a day of rest built into the created order. If you don't observe that, you're going to be in trouble at the very least. And that passage there, and I think I have it up. That was the portions of the Levites. In those days, I saw Judah people treading the winepress on the Sabbath, bringing heaps of grain, loading them on donkeys, working their animals on the Sabbath. The animals don't have a choice in that. Bringing in loads, buying and selling. All that stuff's going on. And he saw the foreign market people bringing stuff in, and then the Jews went out and purchased. Well, that's no big deal. I'll just be one of those guys that purchases stuff. I won't work. Right? And all of that was going on. And so Nehemiah confronted the nobles on that, corrected the problem. They instituted, you'll see those Sabbath regulations there. What's that all about? This is Nehemiah's commitment level. He stationed guards at the door. Did you like that when he told those foreign merchants? If you come again, I'm going to lay hands on you. He was serious, wasn't he? I mean, he wasn't messing around. Why would that be? Think about how serious this was, how heavy it was. This is why they were destroyed. They had profaned the Sabbath. They were setting aside God's regulation for profit. And that never happens today, does it? You know what I was meditating on this week during the Christmas season? The number one thing I can think of, the good thing to come out of Christmas is massive profits. Isn't that awesome? It's a great time for massive profits. Let's get Black Friday going. How wonderful. That's our culture. You see? Well, you can make more money if you sold on the Sabbath. Hey, there's only 7 days to get work done. You better get it done. That grape, them grapes ain't going to press themselves, right? But wait a minute. Has God commanded you to not profane the Sabbath, to take a day of rest? He had. And so they were setting aside the commands of God and exchanging them for profit, for things to do, their own will, their own desire, their own ways and all that. It's a very serious problem. It's a very serious problem. We're not Jewish people. We're not under the law in that sense. So there's not a one-to-one connection there. But as far as a day of rest, it's built into the creative order. Intermarriage with pagans then, which this is where they had come, and this is where they had fallen so far. Nehemiah confronted them on this. I saw the Jews who had married women of Ashdod, Ammon, Moab. Half their children spoke the language of Ashdod. It was just a jumbled up mess that they found themselves in. And it was a very serious response there. This is kind of a weird verse to even read again, but I cursed them, beat some of them, and pulled out their hair. Right? If you do something that you're not supposed to do. My wife posted a video about some guy, some preacher up there yelling how bad their congregation was, and everything. And I very, very spiritually said, oh, I would never do that. I would never want to do that. And then I wanted to do that the next day. I really don't want to do that, but it is discouraging sometimes. But look, it pulled out their hair. You ever think that you have to come to my office and talk to me about something, I'm going to pull your hair out. I'm just not as fit as I used to be. I don't even know if I could get that done. But, boy, serious, huh? Serious. Serious stuff going on there. Serious confrontation of what's going on there. Please don't apply that way today. Hey, I'm going to go beat someone up and pull their hair out. But think about that. It's a very serious, harsh response. The son of the priest had intermarried even. Sanballat and Tobiah had infiltrated the Jews. And so Nehemiah corrected the problem, provided the wood offering, the first fruits. He put things back in order the way that they should be. Now, what's the main point? You could argue very easily, I would say, that the main point of this passage is is dealing with separation. And it's very real and evident in there, isn't it? I mean, that's really what they're talking about there. And it's interesting to me that the tool of the enemy throughout the entire book of Nehemiah and really in the history of the Jews has been to break down the walls of separation. And God was so specifically clear to them not to intermingle with the pagans and nations that they lived among. Very clear. And so, the devil doesn't need to change his plans. We fall into them way too easy. He just keeps the same ones. If it's working, don't fix it, right? So he just keeps on putting pagan influence into God's people's midst and letting them fall into it. And that's what's going on. You could make an argument that's the central point of this. And it very, very likely could be. We could talk more about that, personal separation. And some of these aren't, of course, not one for one because we're not Jews. We're not specifically called to separate from some of those people. But very good, easy applications to make as far as taking part in the same things that people in the world take part in. Very easy application. You're supposed to be salt and light in the world, not rotten meat, right? Not just part of the world, not just right in there with them, doing all the same things they do, following them rather than them. Them being an influence on you rather than you. But here's where my heart goes as we studied Nehemiah. Here's where my heart goes as I think through this, because it bleeds out of this chapter for me, especially right now. I wrote this message months ago, but especially today. What bleeds out of this chapter is Nehemiah's heart had to be broken. didn't it? His heart had to be broken. Think about how much work and sacrifice this guy poured into that place. Think about it. All the time and effort and zeal and seeing God work. And then he gets called back to Babylon. Right? The king calls him back. Hey, Nehemiah, you got a job up here, guy. Come on. I got some wine needs tasted. Right? So he goes back up there and he's, you know, he's got his duties and he's there. And then Nehemiah gets sent back to Israel and he's like, what happened? Right? You ever watch the Incredibles? And what the main superhero says, can't this place just stay fixed for 5 minutes? Right? The superhero, right? You know, he's always having to save the world. He's always having to fix something. He's always having to deal with something. Can you imagine what Nehemiah's heart felt like when he got back to Jerusalem and the place was broken down again spiritually? And Tobiah and Sambalot are back exerting influence and the people are still not accepting the Jewish language and they're just letting the kids and they're intermarrying with pagans and they've desecrated the temple again. His heart had to be broken. Being a leader is all about what's going on in this passage. It is taking people where they're at, with what they do, where they find themselves, and dealing with it. It's heavy sometimes. It is heavy. It's crazy heavy sometimes. You carry the burdens of so many people at one time. It's a thing, like in my experience, that you know they're not yours to carry, but they are yours to carry. You know, they belong to Christ, but they're also yours as an under-shepherd. It hurts when people go astray in sin, and it's not fun to confront sin. You could get the sense in this that Nehemiah was just one of those people who was just on top of stuff, and he just was going to go get in your face. I don't think so. I just think he was a guy that loved God, that cared enough about the people to speak the truth and love to them. He didn't like it. He didn't want to do it, but he had to. And so he just got involved and went out and did his job. He responded in faith. He responded in faith. Remember me, O my God, concerning this, and do not wipe out my good deeds that I have done for the house of my God and for his service. I'd like to just speak to us all today about this issue then of being discouraged, of what's going on in this world. And I've learned but not learned. And I don't think I ever will fully learn. I'm trying. Only God can really change a person. That the more trust you put in anything in this world, the more you're prone to be let down. Especially in the realm of people. Why would you put your faith in a person? They're a sinner, right? They're going to let you down. And yet, if you're putting your faith in them, you better be ready for the letdown. It's okay. Are you discouraged today? Does the situation that you're in seem or feel hopeless? Does it ever? Does it at times? And I'd like you to think about this. Is there a person in your life that you're particularly discouraged about that they'll never change? I meet those people all the time. I meet people who are in desperate need of change who don't see it, don't know. Sometimes you just, it's like beating a one of those little women hammers, you know, you've ever seen those women toolkits, right? They put a hammer in a woman's toolkit and they make it pink so a woman want to buy it. And the thing weighs like a half an ounce. You can't pound a tack with that thing. And it's like taking a 16-penny nail and trying to beat it into an old Iowa oak board with a woman hammer. Ping, 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 ping. You ain't getting nowhere. All right, that's the point. Okay? You have someone in your life like that? We've talked about this 8 million times. When are you going to change? Life has those moments, doesn't it? Doesn't it? What do you do in those times of discouragement? I was just gone for a little time. I come back and this whole place is destroyed again. Nehemiah could have said that, right? It's not in this passage. Do you see what he did? He took action. And then he trusted God for the outcome. Do you think Nehemiah, when he did all of this, just said, whew, okay, all right, I've got it fixed, it'll be okay now? Of course he didn't. You have to know in the back of his mind he was thinking, these people will never change. They will never change. Right? I can pull hair out from now until I die. These people are not going to change. He had to be thinking that in the back of his mind. But he didn't respond in despair and just say, I give up. This world is full of I give up. Right? One of the things Doc taught us early on in counseling is never accept I can't. Never accept it. And how you usually, what do you mean by I can't, is usually how you approach that. What do you mean by I can't? Tell me. And then you read the scriptures like, I can do all things in Christ who strengthens me. Different ones where you can. Well, it's hard. You can accept that. But I can't? No. You don't accept I can't. What do you do with these times of discouragement when people are falling in their same old patterns where it doesn't seem like there's going to be change? You can respond with that I can't attitude, and you just end up divorced. You just throw that relationship in the garbage and you go on to another one. You just set this job aside and go seek something else. You seek this place. A friend of mine this week, Jason, he'll be here in May for a couple weeks. He said, you always take you with you. Wherever you are, there's where you go, or something like that. We were talking about something and he said that. It's kind of a funny way to say it, but it's true. You take yourself with yourself, right? What do you do? Do what Nehemiah did. Nehemiah took action and attacked the problem. He addressed the situations. He corrected things that needed to be corrected. Sometimes very forcefully. I'm saying don't take this methodology necessary because I think you're going to get locked in jail probably today if you start going around pulling people's hair out or whatever. But attack the problem. And then notice what he does as he trusts God for the outcome. You know those people didn't change that day, right? I mean, come on, let's get reality. They didn't change that day. He was going to have to work through these problems a lot. Remember me, oh my God, concerning this, and do not wipe out my good deeds that I have done for the house of my God and for his service. Trusting God in the middle of problems, in the middle of difficulties, fighting discouragement, fighting the tendency to cut and run that is active in our world. Everybody wants to cut and run. I had one a few weeks ago. I want to get on a plane and just go away so I don't have to deal with everybody. What do you think about that? That's sure to go well, right? Why don't you go ruin somewhere else? You know, the thought that comes to my mind. Yeah, let's go ruin somewhere else. Right here is already sufficiently ruined. Avoid that tendency, that human tendency, and deal with problems and trust God for the outcome. Notice these faith-based statements that Nehemiah makes in the middle of his problems. I commanded the Levites that they should purify themselves, come and guard the gates, and keep the Sabbath and holy. Remember this also in my favor, O my God. Spare me according to the greatness of your steadfast love. You know what I think he's meaning by this? Look at this again with me. Remember this in my favor. Spare me according to the greatness of your love. He was expecting God to deal with this and come in and just wipe them out again. It was okay for Nehemiah. He just, well, spare me. I'm trying to do what's right. Remember them, oh my God, because they have desecrated the priesthood and the covenant of the priesthood and the Levite. Turn them over to God. Do not take vengeance. Vengeance is mine, says the Lord. I will repay. Remember them, oh my God. Nehemiah is practicing Romans 13, thousands of years before it was even given to us. Thus I cleanse them from everything foreign. I establish the duties of the priests and the Levites in his work. I provided for the wood offering and appointed times for the first fruits. Remember me, my God, for good. You know, I have real life people in my mind right now, and I know every one of us would benefit from every day turning our problems over to the Lord and trusting him for the outcome. Every day. God, my problems are too big. These people aren't changing. Nothing is going the way that I want it to go. I'm just trying to please you. Remember me, oh my God. Remember me. For my good. Bless me. Lord, don't forget me. Be content with such things as you have. He himself has said, I will never leave you or forsake you. God is not so unjust to overlook the good that you have done for his name. Right? God has promised to reward our faithfulness, to reward our heart desire to please him. And it'll be good in the end. It can be hard. It can be very discouraging when the people in our lives fall into sin. But we have to recognize and confess we are all in this together. We do the same things. We do the same things. And we need forgiveness as much as anyone else. And let God be God in these times. Learn from Nehemiah's his faithfulness. Live out your responsibility. Be a problem solver. Don't think that you can hide in the shadows, but solve problems. And then trust God to fix the situation, to provide, to bless in whatever way that he chooses. Without faith, it is impossible to please God. Whoever would draw near to him, to God, must believe that he exists and he rewards those who seek him. He rewards those who seek him. And so just remember that as you seek to please God, he will be faithful to you. Stay vigilant. Remember that these people had problems because they're falling back into their own patterns and returning to the sins that destroyed them. Notice Nehemiah reminded them of that. Did not your fathers act in this way, and did not our God bring all this disaster on us, on the city? Now you are bringing more wrath on Israel by profaning the Sabbath. Did not Solomon, the king of Israel, sin on account of such women among the many nations where there was no king like him? He was beloved by God, and God made him king over all Israel. Nevertheless, foreign women made even him to sin. Shall we listen to you and do all this great evil and act treacherously against our God by marrying foreign women? Stay vigilant. Learn from your past mistakes and don't repeat them. Remember the consequences of past sins. That's an incredibly important principle in life. Just do some math. If you've lived a lifestyle of sin and it's caused destruction in relationships in your own life and in your heart, why would you want to keep going back there? Why? Well, we know why. We love it. We're sinners. Our hearts are drawn away to things that are not God. But the reality is the reward. You know, sin in the world's good at it. That's what commercials are all about. The world is about putting sin out there. Look at the reward you're going to get. And then you get there and it's like this pinpoint and you forget about it 30 seconds over because actually what you got is this load of condemnation and consequences, right? Remember the truth. That's cost me in the past. I will never go there again. Shouldn't that have been the attitude of the Israelites? Shouldn't it? We're destroyed. Look at what we did. And then they had that early on, remember? This is what I said when we were going through that part about the covenant. Be careful with covenants. How'd they do? As soon as Nehemiah left, they just chucked it. You see? Be careful with that stuff. Stay vigilant. Learn from past mistakes. Remember the consequences of past sins. Take radical action to correct sin problems. Be like Nehemiah. Don't get discouraged. Trust God. He knows. He knows. He knew ahead of time. He knew what he was calling Nehemiah into. The relationship that you're thinking of, the situation that you're in, the work environment that you're in, the place that you're at, God knew you were going to be there before you were ever there. He did. It's a hard pill to swallow sometimes, but he knows. Trust him. Do your part. Solve the problems. Work at it. But trust God, ultimately, he'll work it out. Pray with me. God, thank you for Nehemiah's wonderful life. God, we live in the same world, and so it's rich for us as we see this. Many of us, some of us here, have people in our lives who are very prone to return to their old ways that are so destructive and hurtful. And it's frustrating. It's discouraging. If you will. Help us, God, to remain faithful as your people, to love regardless, and not to become some legalistic thing where we're expecting change or demanding change, but rather to speak the truth in love and turn it over to you and trust you. That is hard for us. You know that, Lord. We want our situations ordered. We want our life comfortable. We want things designed our way. And even when it seems right, or seems the best way, It's not. So we're just trusting you for how you're working, what you're going to do, and we confess today that you alone are God. We are not. We have no power to change the circumstances and situations, less power than Nehemiah had to control our lives and think the way things go. But God, help us as we seek to live out his example to us, his human example, the life of faith. God, encourage us today in that truth that you are God. You do know, you do see, you are working. Nothing that we see is the end of the story ever. And that there is good throughout, woven throughout everything that happens and everything that we do and every response that we have. And so, Lord, encourage us and help us today in our weakness. In Jesus' name, amen.